This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
Spiegel of this afternoon show doing the first Score broadcast of the year in Pat Hughes's place. He did a great job once again, but he got himself into a nightmare scenario. It sure sounded to me, it would appear that he had forgotten the engineer's name.
It's a crazy, crazy baseball world. Thank you so much to our engineer who did a great, great job as he always does. Thank you so much. Thank you to Tyler Buterbaugh.
Second thank you, hoping that the name's going to come to him on the second thank you.
What's his first name?
You're supposed to know that.
Sorry. Is that offensive?
We know the engineer.
Yeah, I think
Walt.
Walt has been doing...
Walt Ellis.
He's been helping visiting radio, I think, since I was a White Sox board op back when we had the White Sox. Speaks. Come on.
You should know his name.
What are we doing here? What are we doing here? You should know his name. You have to ask Billy Russo what his name is? What are we doing here?
I mean, this is a guy who was in the military. I mean, he demands respect.
The guy you're looking for is an ex-commando. He killed 16 Chechen rebels single-handed.
He was with the Interior Ministry.
You're not going to believe this. He killed 16 Czechoslovakians. The guy was an interior decorator.
His house looked like
Man, it was great. But no, I enjoyed, like I said, I heard the majority.
No, I did a great job.
He did.
of as we bash him right as the radio show begins.
Well, just for the one thing, not for his performance in the game, just for so disrespectfully not remembering the name of the man who got him on the air.
Thank you so much to our engineer who did a great, great job.
You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
Do what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah. Say my name.
Walt. Walt is the man.
You're damn right.
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
Ah, you must remember the names of the engineer. You must write them down or else you end up like me. Frantically hoping for help during sign-off, trying to give everybody their due. Walt Ellis did a great job and goes back a long way in helping this station out in an engineering sense. Whoops. Whoops. See, it's hard. If I did say his name, I probably would have pronounced it right. You know.
What about Frank Beaver?
Who's that?
Another engineer I think that's really good that Mac was telling us about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Frank Beaver.
I didn't catch that.
Oh.
Interesting.
Frank Beamer, the former head coach at Virginia Tech? No? Oh, that's too bad. Oh, not him. Oh, somebody else. I don't know. That's Shane Reardon. Chris Tannehill is also here. Layla Rahimi is also here. She's been really good today, and it's been fun to have her on the show, on the Spiegel and Holmes show.
I've just been laughing the whole time.
That's good. That works.
And we get to talk about baseball. This is the most baseball I've talked about in months.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of baseball that we want to talk about. And we do. We want to talk about... the Angels roster. And let's do that at the end of this segment, okay?
Yes.
Trust us, people. You want to hear us talk about the Angels roster.
If nothing else, just to make ourselves happy.
We're going to do it. But before we get there...
Seam heads.
Before we get there, we need to touch on a couple of Bears things. Since I have last had a chance to have these airwaves in a talk show since, they've gotten rid of DeMarcus Walker, who is a fine guy, seemingly.
He's a guy.
And just a replacement level defensive end who can hold the edge a little bit against the run. He can rush the passer a little bit, really just a little bit. And he made just a normal amount of NFL money. That's all fine and good. But that's not a person that you want to invest in moving forward on a good team and a good defense. So I applaud the release of DeMarcus Walker.
They have to free up more money to simply shore up both lines, right? And the other one is Gerald Everett, who RIP to your half-wheel route in the flat that Caleb Williams, even though Everett only played, what, 22% of the offensive snaps, still chose him too many times as a read.
8 receptions.
Not that I'm mad about it. Yeah, but how many targets?
Yeah.
How many targets? It was way more than 8, because I can't tell you how many times I was like, why are you throwing to him?
Man.
For him to get 2 yards?
That's a good question. How many targets for Gerald Everett? I'll look
it
up right now.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't know. But And I'm not mad necessarily at Gerald Everett. It was just a function of that offense and what was going on. But either way, Too many targets compared to Cole Kmet for me that Gerald Everett had.
13 targets in 2024.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much. Because Cole Kmet had like 3.
Guys.
Not 3, but we all know he wasn't targeted enough this season. I'm okay with it.
Their offensive vision was such trash.
I mean, it was always the right side, like a curved route to the flat, where he's just like 2 yards ahead of the line of scrimmage. And I'm like, why?
The team building and the offensive coordination and the fact that the head coach, Eberflus, had no offensive philosophy whatsoever. My God.
He's in a better place now. He's in Dallas. Fine. He seems pretty happy about it.
And we're in a better place. And we did Ben's Vision last week. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Oh, Ben's Vision.
Ben's Vision, where we talk about Ben Johnson's vision and think about this roster from the perspective of Ben Johnson, as it should be, and looked at the tight end usage. And remember that in terms of tight ends, the Detroit Lions used 2 tight ends, 12 personnel, so much more than the Bears did.
And they also, when they needed them to block, actually used them to block.
Oh, absolutely. He used a lot of tackles as extra tight ends as well. In terms of 12 personnel in the NFL, the Lions were 3rd in terms of usage.
Wait, so who is 1 and 2?
I could look that back up, but they were 11% above the league average in terms of
maybe Kansas City.
How many times they used that that 12 personnel with 2 tight ends? The Bears were way down at 19%. And even 13 personnel, the Lions were 9th at 3.5%, 3 tight ends. So they need tight ends that they can trust as both blockers and receivers. And Gerald Everett, you ain't it. So right now it's Cole Kmet and God knows who else. There is going to be
some dude.
Oh, Mike Valenti told us last week, there will be so many tight ends in and out of this roster on paper and during OTAs and during camp. They are going to load up on tight ends, as they should, and try to figure out who are the guys that they're going to use, because they will use a lot of them. And I'm glad that one of them is not Gerald Everett.
You're going to find 17 tight ends. I hope you're ready.
It's Mike Valenti. That's awesome.
I do love Mike Valenti. I do think that there was one of the years of Getsy where the Bears decided to carry more tight ends than usual. And I think maybe that is the concept, although we know how that was executed once, you know, push came to shove there. Maybe pun intended because of the blocking. But here's where it gets sexy time.
Okay.
The Bears, according to overthecap.com, now have $79,758,403 of open cap space.
That's a lot, man.
That's 4th in the league. You know how much the Patriots have? Do you remember we were like, the Bears have $110 million to open cast base. We're the richest people ever.
Yeah.
And then we partied. Do you remember that?
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Yeah, the Patriots have $128 million in cap space.
And now they've got a head coach who maybe some people will say, that's the guy I want to go play for. And a young quarterback who some players might think is somebody they want to be a part of.
Raiders are second. It's 99, just over 90. It's like 99 and a half. But here's where it gets interesting. Commanders are third at 82.
God, that's crazy.
So, you know, I think when you consider the season they've had and the quarterback and how established Jaden Daniels was and the fact that they got to the title, you know, the NFC title game, man, that is enticing, I think, for a lot of free agents, too.
Big-bodied wide receiver for Jaden Daniels. Go out and get him. I mean,
nice little compliment to Terry McLaurin, you know, like a guy who's possession over the middle.
I mean, if
shake and bake with the diversity there.
If T. Higgins doesn't stay in Cincinnati, like,
I think he stays in Cincinnati.
Probably, but go ahead and reset the market if you're Washington.
Sean Desai, by the way, reportedly going to Cincinnati.
As the defensive coordinator?
No. Let me see. No, okay. It was definitely an assistant.
Because Sean Desai, it's pretty hilarious, is the, you know, was the imitation Vic Fangio that they tried in Philly.
Senior defensive role is the report from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN.
That's awesome.
I do understand. Like, I remember Sam Acho giving an overwhelming vote to Sean Desai, saying he was the closest you were going to get to Fangio. And I understand why it was said at the time. So I didn't hate it at the time.
But it didn't work because of the people skills. Well, you know? Yeah, because like Fangio has those in terms of teaching and coaching, and Desai came from an analyst perspective, and you know, I mean, it's a totally different smoke when you're the head boss of a defense like that.
Yeah, I feel like a million years has passed since. Like Brandon Staley just made the news recently. You remember that whole deal?
Yeah.
Staley's coaching tree in existence was a very hot commodity.
So I'm interested to see what they do from a tight end perspective. There's not a lot of great free agent tight ends out there. In terms of top tier, they'll certainly draft one, but there will be a couple more. And it's not like you can move on from Cole Kmet, or necessarily you'd even want to.
No.
But with all the tight end needs out there, and because this free agent class isn't much in that way.
I have been critical of Cole Kmet on the station, especially in his younger years when he was, I think, a little more of a liability when it came to holding on to the ball. But I understand what happened to him this season. I think he got asked to block quite a bit. We know how he was used in this offense. I want to give him another year of just honest chance. I'm not saying don't add to the roster around him. That would be a mistake. Like Valenti said, add what you need.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be tight end heavy. Cool. Like, happy about that. An offense is not made on one or two players alone, as we know. But I just really want to see how his role changes with Ben Johnson at the helm. Like, that is something that I'm very much looking forward to. That is my vision for Ben's vision. I know it's not part of it tomorrow, but still.
It's good, though. It's a good, healthy vision. In terms of free agents, by the way, Mike Gesicki, who can catch but isn't much of a blocker. Zach Ertz, who's really good but is old, and I bet Washington, with all that cap space, is going to want to keep Zach Ertz because he and Jaden Daniels had developed a thing. All right, you mentioned a front office promotion. And for the Bears, and Matt Feinstein is the guy who got that promotion. Matt Feinstein joined the Bears in 2022 and was promoted to Vice President of Football Administration, according to the team, as they announced on Friday. He was the Director of Football Administration. So you get a VP role that comes with money, it comes with a nicer title, and they get to keep a guy that they care a lot about and reward him a little bit.
I saw that news before. I saw the news that Ian Cunningham was not going to be the one in Jacksonville. I know he got interviewed for the GM job there, and we were trying to figure out who was going to get it. And I did wonder if that move was made in case Ian Cunningham left. Feinstein reportedly, according to Brad Biggs, is in charge of managing the salary cap and negotiating contracts. That's a huge role in a front office.
Mm-hmm.
This is somebody that we should probably know. And that's how I feel about trying to figure out the front office roles on the team. And we've talked a lot about the coaching staff. It's finally finalized. That's good. But we still need to figure out who is not just Ian Cunningham in this front office for the Bears. We know Ryan Poles, but there's other minds here that I think are very important in all of this.
And Feinstein was on the calls. He was one of the six people, who were on the interview calls, and he was in the back taking notes. But remember, I had some real good sources during that process and was reporting before others and before the thing got finalized, just how impressed Ben Johnson's people were and other candidates' people were with the Bears process, that this was a different experience than it was when they ended up with Eberflus. A very different thing. There was no other agents driving the thing like Trace Armstrong did. And there was an efficiency and a quality of the interview process that was really, really good. And then when it came time to sign Ben Johnson, and we heard his agent on The Score talk about this, just
Rick Smith,
how above and beyond the Bears went and George McCaskey went in terms of the money involved and also the level of control and the level of vision that will be allowed. Like, the Bears have gone outside their comfort zone, and they've got a head coach who's going to be at the top of the football philosophy food chain for the first time probably since Mike Ditka.
Yeah, I still am wrapping my head around it, to be honest.
It's a big deal.
When you put it that way, it's still like, this is the new world order, and I'm not entirely sure how this is going to go. It sounds good. I'm scared in a good way.
Yeah. I mean, this is the new world order, but I think it's the right one for the NFL. Don't
you?
It is,
of course. And famously reported by Kalen Kaler, it wasn't that Trace Armstrong necessarily forced anybody on anyone, although we know his influence on the Bears organization up to this point. But the concept of Poles not hiring Eberflus, they had the same agent. They met at a golf event. Yeah. Like, it's not like he didn't know about the guy. They just shoved him on him. Like,
right.
Poles took responsibility. I don't know how many times we have to say that as well, but I feel like that's something that is floating around that we have to reiterate.
Well, I think we've done it. She's Leila Rahimi. I'm Matt Spiegel. It is the Spiegel and Holmes Show. Let's hang out in this news about Justin Ishbia. Him abandoning the Twins and moving over to the White Sox. Let's find out why.
You don't want to talk about the Angels? Fine.
Oh, I forgot we were going to talk about the Angels roster. Damn it.
It's our nerdy seamheadness.
All right, we're gonna have to hold it. We can do it after our next guest. Dan Hayes is going to join us to talk White Sox ownership and the development of this story. We'll do it next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback.
And welcome back to the Coliseum in Oakland, California, where there's no score. And we're going to do our picks to click a little bit later, but right now our pick to click is Dan Hayes. What you got for us, Danny, my boy?
Oh, Danny, my boy. Hawk Harrelson loved him some Dan Hayes.
Who doesn't?
We love us some Dan Hayes. Tell you what, he's the best Twins beat writer for The Athletic I ever saw. Dan Hayes joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Massive news over the weekend, written by John Greenberg with help from Dan Hayes. And I mean, you got to help us as Dan Hayes from The Athletic joins me, Matt Spiegel, and her, Leila Rahimi. Why did Justin Ishbia abandon his pursuit of the Twins? A massive blow to Minnesota, it seems, from the reaction and everything, but did it fall apart, or is this him choosing the White Sox closer to his heart or home? What's your perspective on it with your Sox ties and your current Minnesota connection, sir?
Yeah. And good to be on with you guys. You know, look, this is without question. I know the White Sox declined that there's any kind of deal with Justin Ishbia. I know that they've said there's no path to power, but Justin Ishbia was well down the road with the Twins. There was an expectation that whoever was going to buy the Twins was going to be selected by opening day. That doesn't mean they'd be in place, but everything basically would be well on the way to a close. And everybody around the league, and we're talking, you know, the great part about working at Team Athletic is we have a lot of really good reporters who have a lot of great league sources. Everybody around the league thought Justin Ishbia was the Twins guy. And it fell apart because there has to be. Look, if you are so desperate to buy a team, if that's your main goal and you can own this team by opening day, there has to be something in place with the White Sox, a handshake deal that, you know, after Jerry passes, you know, something along that line that he can take over. I mean, it just doesn't compute otherwise because he loves the White Sox. He already owns a stake in there. We know about the mansion he's building in Winnetka. He clearly wants to establish roots there. And it's a chance to wake a sleeping giant because, frankly, if the White Sox get that new park and they become a destination the way that Wrigleyville is, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, more than a quarter of what Wrigleyville is, right? Because we know what that does. But the White Sox have never been a destination where even if the team's terrible, 25,000 people go to the game because there's a lot of fun to have around the ballpark. You know, there's bars, there's music venues, stuff like that. And I think if the White Sox were ever to get that stadium, man, it would be a huge deal. And I think Justin Ishbia just sees the long-term goal here with the White Sox and is willing to take a back seat to Jerry Reinsdorf for the last part of his tenure as White Sox owner.
Yeah, Dan, I appreciate the context that you've added to this because it's not in a vacuum. You know, it's not just the story of Justin Ishbia buys more shares of the White Sox. It's him walking away from a deal that we don't, I think, understand how close it really was to happening. Can you illustrate that piece of it, is how close he was to buying the Twins? When you say opening day, all the things that have to be in place for that to occur in Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Again, there still needs to be MLB's owners approve it. You know, they have to do all the paperwork and that stuff. But it was thought to be that close. And it's so close that granted, the Twins and the people that are in the front office are a step removed because there's an outside company facilitating the sale, just like with a house and a real estate agent, right? You don't – that agent takes care of all the negotiations. But the Twins were shocked the other day when this came down. Everybody was expecting Ishbia to be the boss at some point this season and clearly getting improved by opening day. So it certainly was well down the road. And we're talking, you know, when this news broke is 33 days from opening day. So when I talked to people involved with the sale early in January, the message was total confidence that there was a robust interest in the Twins and that the goal was to pick the winning bidder by opening day. And basically I was told if someone speeds up the process, you allow them to do that. And by all accounts, he was. And the messaging now on the Twins side of the deal is, well, we have adequate group of buyers that are interested and we may have a resolution within 30 to 60 days. So the timeline has suddenly shifted. And the only reason can be that Ishbia abandoned his bid for the Twins. And John Greenberg reported it in the story that they worked on together, that after it was made public, was looking at the Twins, that the Reinsdorfs approached him sometime in January. And honestly, the minute that happened, the Twins had no shot, as long as there was some kind of, you know, wink, wink deal. There has to be that deal just because, look, he's so far with the Twins and he wants a team. And I think that's the ultimate motivation there. And I think he thinks he's going to have a team at some point in the future. And man, I think you look at it, the Twins, there's some revenue to be earned there with a new ownership switch. This team sold 3 million tickets 3 times. You know, they're about 1.98 million last year. If they could get a new owner, that's an additional 50 million just in ticket revenue that would come on if you could hit 3 million ever again. And honestly, Twins fans are so ready for this. The similarities between two fan bases is striking. Like, both of them want new owners, and both of them dream of a guy like Justin Ishbia who comes in and has deep pockets and wants to win. But I think that, you know, it's short-term gains versus what could be just a monster with the White Sox if they ever get, you know, their potential realized.
Well, I think you just touched on it where I wanted to go as we're talking to Dan Hayes. From The Athletic, who knows the Sox fan base and the Sox storylines and the Reinsdorf family, but now is covering the Twins as well as anyone in the game. Because what is there to gain in terms of a new Twins owner as compared to the White Sox? The White Sox, if they can get the stadium and if they can do that, you get a sleeping giant thing. There's just... I mean, the Twins have a ballpark. It's a wonderful ballpark. I love going to Target Field. But it's done. So I don't know what more there is to do there other than draw. There just isn't an upside that possibly compares to the global view of what the White Sox could do, is there?
I mean, look, it's, what, the third biggest media market? And you can argue maybe it's like ninth or tenth because of the Cubs get most of the attention. But ultimately, you're still in a huge media market, and there is a lot of fan base that we've seen them support the White Sox when there's a reason to support, and we've seen them go away in droves. But the franchise value with the new stadium, and I, you know, there's a very good chance this could help Jerry achieve a new stadium by Justin Ishbia buying up the more stake and giving him some cash to accomplish that. This franchise can go through the roof in value. And I think, you know, potential-wise, Chicago 100% over Minnesota. And Minnesota, you're right. Target Field's awesome. It's, you know, I've worked in three teams now, Padres. I've been pretty fortunate with the ballparks. You know, Target Field's amazing. I think it's a top 7 or 8 ballpark in baseball. The fans are really good, but you're looking at revenue from tickets sold. You're not looking at revenue from, you know, the area around being a draw, the way that Wrigleyville is for the Cubs, you know, and the way that maybe the Sox can do. I don't know, you know, obviously the 78 sounds like it's up in the air, and maybe the Fire have a shot at that. Who knows how that goes? But if the White Sox can find some kind of place to build, maybe actually Justin Ishbia is clearing all that land in Winnetka to put a park there. Who knows?
Dan, yeah. Good stuff, man. Nice catching up with you. Great job on this story. And you're the right perspective for us to help process this news. It'll be a fascinating thing to watch moving forward. Appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you.
You got it.
Thanks, Dan.
That's Dan Hayes from The Athletic here on 670 The Score. Yeah, the mansion he's building in Winnetka is just is outrageous. I remember talking like a long time ago when the 78 had come up about the possibility of selling the team while in process for getting the new stadium okayed. And I think that's exactly what's happening here, because then the influx of capital can be from the ownership group, and you can ask a hell of a lot less from the state in order to get it done. I would stand here today and tell you that I think a new stadium at the 78 is going to happen for the White Sox.
I also think that what he said about the possibility of Jerry Reinsdorf having a verbal agreement, we know that is how he deals. He's a of his word type of person, so I could see that being a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go,
yes,
we have to shout out, speaking of the White Sox, a roster that Matt and I are trying to wrap our heads around.
Oh, my God. The Angels roster. And really, they're non-roster invitees as well.
We just don't understand.
It feels like a Stefan sketch. The Angels roster has everything. Because you've got former White Sox, obviously, in Yoan Moncada, who's on the roster, Tim Anderson, who was a non-roster invitee.
Right, and that's what, when AJ brought up TA and you guys were talking about, and that's what got us talking about this.
Yeah. They also have Yolmer Sanchez. Yolmer Sanchez
is alive.
Let's go.
We think maybe Ron Washington's hitting that yayo again, or what's going on here over there in Anaheim?
Well, not just that, but they have Kyle Hendricks.
There's something for everybody.
And Jorge Soler?
Jorge Soler is there. Cubs.
What year is this?
Cubs fans of various vintages. White Sox fans.
I got some bad news for you guys here about some of that.
No.
You mentioned Yoan Moncada. A friend of mine sent this to me yesterday.
Okay.
The headline from SI.com, Angels $5 million infielder behind schedule due to soreness.
And what?
You guess who it is.
I've never heard this.
Oh, no.
Oh, on top of that, who's on the coaching staff as an assistant coach, Tanny? Your guy, Jason Nix, White Sox legend.
Jason with a Y. What about his brother,
yep,
Lance?
Jason with a Y.
Can he get a job too?
Jason Nix.
Eric Young, the former Cub, Eric Young Sr.
EY, worked with him in Houston.
There you go.
I have his bobblehead.
How about Jerry Nairn? Did you ever work with Jerry Nairn?
Yes, I did. Also, Jerry Nairn was a White Sox assistant.
How about this? Former Cubs strength coach, crazy man Tim Buss. is on the coaching staff for the Angels.
Seriously, what year is this? I feel like we're talking about this team in 2016.
The Angels roster has everything.
Guys, I got a place in Orange County. We can go check this out for reconnaissance.
Let's go.
Obviously they're in Arizona right now.
I knew you were loaded. You've been hiding it for so long. You got a place in Orange County?
Is my dad's house. How do you guys feel about hanging out there?
God.
Let's go to a game with your dad.
My dad doesn't like baseball.
That's why.
And he gets annoyed that I cover bad teams. He's like, why do you keep covering terrible teams?
I have no choice, Dad. I have no choice.
I like how he just mocks my life choices.
You live and work in Chicago. So, I mean, you absolutely have no choice.
Dan Hayes and I used to work together on the San Diego beat.
Oh, God. I love that Yolmer is there. Something about Yolmer Sanchez being there.
It just puts it all together.
Oh, it really does.
That man's name is Carlos.
Yeah, they should DFA Yolmer and call up Carlos as a bit for
and
the
fans. And then he'll just pour the water bucket over his head while it's raining and everything will be complete again.
You guys watching White Lotus yet?
No, I haven't watched yet. Is it good?
I watched the first episode. I'm going to watch the second tonight when I get home.
All right.
Good. I'm too cheap to have HBO.
We watched
just like I offered up my dad's house for us to hang out at.
We watched the Gabby Petito American Murder on Netflix.
I heard that's pretty
fun weekend.
Bad.
Yeah, it's
I heard what happened to her was pretty bad.
Tell you what, it was it did not end well.
What happened to her?
Did it end in murder?
Yeah.
It ended in murder.
Damn.
A couple
poor girl.
Yeah, it was very, very sad. Terrible. What was not said was this radio show. Thank you so much to Layla Rahimi. Great job by you. Thanks for working. And thanks to AJ Przinsky. He was really fun at 4 o'clock. Thanks to Dan Hayes, who just joined us, and to Ron Coomer, who had joined us earlier on in the show. Thank you to Connor O'Donnell and Jenna Duddleston. And, of course, Shane Reardon, who does a terrific job. And for Chris Tannehill. It is the Spiegel and Holmes Show. We thank you for listening. We will replay that by beginning again tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Bulls basketball is next, right here on 670 The Score.
All right, guys. Have a great life.
Have a good show.
We'll try.
What?